Propaniacs.
Lock the doors, dim the lights, unplug the phone, and don't worry, we won't tell anyone that you're listening to Propaniacs, the King of the Hill podcast. In this episode, we air out Hank's dirty laundry. I'm Melton McManerberry.
And I'm Daisy Durandal.
And here we go. We start this episode off cruising through the neighborhood there on Rainy Street and through the alley. We're set up with this idyllic, like, white suburban American scene. It's like it's from the 1950s or 60s or something. It feels like an episode of Leave It to Beaver. Everyone's out enjoying the beautiful day, and Hank is even humming America the Beautiful. It's so patriotic. And Peggy is hanging out the laundry.
Dale is doing something, I guess, eavesdropping on his neighbors. I'm not sure what that was.
He had a metal detector, I thought, but then also...
He had an ear thing.
It's like he was multitasking.
Hank gave Bill a little honk, and Bill was very happy to receive the attention.
Awesome. Well, this thing is quickly subverted, though, because Peggy looks like June Cleaver out there hanging the laundry on the laundry lines to dry, but it turns out that that was not the plan, and this idyllic suburban American scene is quickly subverted by literal dirty laundry.
If it's hanging on the line, though, isn't it clean laundry?
Touche. I feel like that's going to come up a few more times in this episode, actually. It's a little inconsistent.
Oh, yeah.
So what is Hank's objection here?
Hank's upset because his underwears are hanging out for all the neighbors to see. He doesn't want them to know that he wears underwears.
Right. When he pulls them down, it gets worse because he sees Luann.
Okay, was she in a bikini or was she in her underwears too?
I thought maybe it was her underwear. Was it like a sports bra or something? I don't know. She was scantily clad anyway.
Whoa!
Yep. Hank reacts predictably, as he usually does when he sees more of Luann than he bargained for. Well, the issue is their dryer's not working, so they have to head to Megalomart to get a new dryer. Bobby is super thrilled about dryer shopping.
Oh, yeah, he is. There's a dryer with a window, and he is enthralled by it. It's like he's never seen a dryer at a laundromat.
I'm with Bobby. I like watching that, too. And we got a new dryer a year or so ago, and it's got the, you know, see-through door or whatever, and hours of entertainment at the McManerberry household. Well, anyway, they meet up with this salesman in the washer and dryer department, the appliance department.
Well, he's got a comb-over that's great. I love his comb-over.
I feel like I'm looking into my future when I see that guy's comb-over.
Me too.
Yeah. The poor guy is going to do his spiel on the benefits or the pros and cons of propane versus electric dryers. But Hank doesn't let him get far with that until he just takes it over.
Hank takes the opportunity to be a propane salesman on the salesman.
Right. He ends up shaking hands with him and giving him a card. That was pretty funny.
I mean, the poor guy gets schooled on his own product.
I love that Buckley has been promoted here to greeter at Megalomart such that he gets to say to each customer who walks in the door,
hey. It's what he does best.
Yes.
It's the perfect job for him.
Yeah, Luann loves it too. I'm very proud of her Buckley for his hey gig.
Yeah, she just gets the standard hey because he is the consummate professional.
That's right, that's right. So here we go. They go to pay here, and the whole thing that drives the plot here is that they go to get this credit card, and they get denied. I kind of understand throughout this episode why they don't just pay with Hank's other credit card. He says, the last thing I need is a credit card. I've already got one. So why didn't he just turn around and pay with that one, and they get the dryer, and they walk out? Was it the 10% discount?
I think so, because Peggy was reading the little brochure, and...
I like that it was the Chuck Mangione endorsement that really kind of put Hank over the top as far as
right,
being a favorite.
Because his diet shakes did okay by Hank.
Right, right.
You can tell the diet shakes really worked for Hank, too.
Yeah.
So then they show Luann visiting Buckley while he's on break, and Bobby comes up to say hey to Buckley, but Buckley won't respond because he's on break.
Right, that's so great. I think the best thing about this episode is the B story. The whole thing with Bobby and Luann and Buckley in this scene, I think is really funny.
Oh, Bobby thinks that they're really there for his birthday, which is not for 3 weeks.
I guess
the Hills are not planners.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question that they would be there for his birthday. It's just, boy, does he make this whole thing an elaborate scheme. It's great. It's great how his imagination just keeps wandering on that, and everything he sees is additional evidence that something big is happening related to his birthday.
Which gets me, because I'm like, did you not see the broken dryer? Did you not see the clothes being hung up outside?
Right.
Do you really think your family is going to all this trouble just for your birthday?
Right. The evidence was right there.
So then Hank gets denied for the credit card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's at work, I guess, the next day or whatever, and one of the other employees there at Strickland Propane is going to help him sort this thing out. So she's going to look up his credit score, and Hank says,
I'm pretty sure you can't just look up my credit score unless I send some type of permission letter to the credit bureau.
So Hank is, like, super naive here, and the way he thinks about doing business, this personal, person-to-person touch, like a personal formality that he does and thinks everyone kind of does, it's kind of unthinkable to him that you would just be using technology. Or the credit bureaus would just use technology for convenience sake here rather than doing something personal. And that's really the theme of the episode, I think, at least the A story. It's Hank versus the machine, or later it gets called the Beast. It's Hank's personal touch and even his personality versus a personality-free, soulless, widespread technology world. So kind of everything that's being done that's not on a personal level seems to be against Hank. At least that's the way he sees it. And this is where we first get a hint of that.
I just want to know how an assistant manager of a business, place, or a store has never run a credit report before. I mean, how does he not know that even in 1998, it was really easy to run someone's credit?
True.
I mean, if they let the guy at Megalomart do it, certainly anyone else can do it. Well, just about anyone else.
Right. Yeah, I understand. But it's just not how Hank conducts business, though, I think. Hank is a handshake guy in a mouse click world.
Well, Buck is deducting that $10 out of his paycheck at any rate.
Right. Very important, that $10. Well, it turns out that the issue was that Hank owes $40 for not returning a video to Arlen Video, at least that's what shows in the credit report. So to Arlen Video, Hank goes to handle this, of course, person to person. What he learns from the associate there is that it's a computer mistake. The computer is showing that he rented a video and never returned it. Hank didn't rent the video, has never heard of it, doesn't know anything about it. And of course, he takes this as a personal affront. He's looking for a derriere on this computer so he can kick it and then clear his good name.
Well, he has rented the Great Santini 23 times.
Okay, I haven't seen it. If there's a joke there, the Great Santini, I didn't get it. What is
it's like
it?
A military movie.
Ah, that sounds about right. Well, considering the limited choices, King of the Hill motif that shows up here as they go and look for cuffs and collars, the various sections that Hank looks in initially are action-adventure, action-comedy, and action-action.
So Arlen Video has those. And the Great Santini, and Cuffs and Collars.
Cuffs and Collars. Also, movies for Peggy that have either Billy Crystal or Merchant or Ivory in the title. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure Peggy sleeps through any Merchant Ivory film that she watches, but pays attention to the Billy Crystal ones.
Probably. I can imagine Bobby enjoying Billy Crystal also.
Yeah.
B-story-wise, of course, Bobby, now he's convinced that this errand is all about getting a movie for him. So it's kind of like he needs to show by his browsing which movies he's into, so they'll buy the right movies for him. I like, yeah, Hank says to the associate, what?
And penalize yourself whatever you think is fair.
I mean, that's what Hank thinks people do because that's what he would do.
Right. That's right. But
if he ever did anything wrong, of course.
Right. I don't know if this associate would do that if he could, but the whole point here is it's out of his hands. It's in the Beast. It's in the machine. And there's just nothing he can do about it. The Beast is certainly not going to penalize itself.
Well, I, for one, would like to see Hank go all Office Space on the computer and the long-haired guy.
Yeah, I can get on board with that.
I like at the end of the scene when Hank is going in or emerging from the beaded curtains, and Nancy and John Redcorn have a stack of tapes, which are probably from behind the beaded curtain.
No doubt.
But they're shaking their heads in judgment at Hank.
Right. So it's not just that a lot of company man. It's not just that John Redcorn shops with Boomhauer. He does apparently shop with Nancy. Or maybe they just ran into each other. Okay, the next scene is in the kitchen. Hank is explaining to Peggy what's going on, and they're kind of talking out what to do about it. And so Hank's innocence here is important to Hank in Peggy's eyes. So he makes it a point with Peggy to make sure that she doesn't think that he rented the tape. Peggy doesn't care, it doesn't seem like, or she kind of goes back and forth between caring and not caring. But generally speaking, his guilt or innocence here is pretty much irrelevant to Peggy. All she wants is a dryer.
Right. That seems out of character for Peggy. But she has such tunnel vision about this dryer that I think she would let anything go to get that dryer. Mm.
Yeah, I think I'm with Hank on this, although I don't know if I were in Hank's shoes, I would be concerned that Milton's wife would not think that I rented Cuffs and Collars, but maybe for a different reason than Hank here. But I wouldn't want Milton's wife or anyone else to think that I'm putting money into an industry that I would call exploitative and demeaning. I would build. This is what he said on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's Hank's issue. I think he's more just ashamed and embarrassed.
Yeah, they don't think that deeply about anything. Mm. Also, I like that he refers to it as a stag film.
I had never heard that term.
I don't know. So does that mean a stag party is where a bunch of people get together and watch a stag film? Sounds weird.
It does not sound like a party that I would be invited to or would attend. So I guess I will never know.
So we're not doing a stag party after this?
No.
Okay, so June 23rd is the day Hank supposedly rented Cuffs and Collars, which is a great title for a stag film, by the way.
Yes, yeah, there's more good ones coming up later.
So they're trying to remember where he was on June 23rd, and I can't remember what I did 23 minutes ago.
I guess they were consulting. I like they were consulting their little planners or whatever. So I love that Peggy had in her planner, Boggle with Nancy, leave Hank at home.
But the fact that she left him at home arises suspicion that he did, in fact, rent Cuffs and Collars.
Perhaps having his own little solo stag party. Okay, the next scene is the den. Where, what's Luann up to?
Luann is braiding her hair, which is something the Platters have no talent for.
She's broken through. Her beauty school training is working. Love it.
In the beginning, Luann was like, we're really just here to get a dryer. But it seems like Bobby has convinced her that, no, there's more to it. And so they are practicing surprises.
I love when Bobby and Luann, like, when their minds get on the same track like that. I think Husky Bobby was another example of that, when Bobby was, like, trying on all his new stretchy clothing, and Luann was telling him how hot he looked. They have, like, I don't know, good chemistry or something together when they're in the same room, and it's just fun. And then
they're good cousins.
Yeah, they are. They're good cousins. And as I've said a million times, I think their voice acting is the best on the show, and together, there's something magic happens when the two of them voice acting a scene together. Well, the next scene is the alley. The guys are standing around doing their thing, drinking beer and talking.
Bill actually has more in-depth thought about this than anyone.
He does.
He says it creates a standard of beauty that your average man can't compete with.
I love that he feels it as a man, that the standard of beauty there is too high. But methinks the man doth protest too much, Daisy. We shall see. This is a good example of Dale doing what he does. Sometimes he foils Hank. When you think Hank has kind of gone off the deep end, Dale's around to be further off the deep end. He kind of pushes Hank back to more ground. Place. He does that here. Hank describes, you know, the issue that it's really a computer that he's battling with here, and Dale says, computers don't make errors. What they do on purpose. And I like Hank's response. He says,
Dale, I'm having a problem with one videotape, not some techno boogeyman.
So Hank does seem to get kind of nutso here over the $40 and over clearing his good name, but he's not seeing this as a vast computer-fueled conspiracy. So it's grounded, but you know, it is a little naive, I think. Daisy, this is an example of where Dale actually kind of has a point. Or maybe he's just a prophet in 1998. Maybe this wasn't the case in 1998, but it sure is now. That our personal information is just out there, and it's uncontrollable, and if it's got a mistake, if there's some bad personal information out there, it's just out there. You're never going to retract it. It's in too many different places. Once it's in the beast, it cannot be taken out of the beast. Maybe Dale's on to something.
I don't know, but he also doesn't think communists are humans.
Yeah, he also thinks that Russia was still communist in the late 90s when the IBM computer beat Garry Kasparov. The next scene is back in Hank's office at Strickland Propane. We see him using some of the tools of the trade.
Yeah. So he just gets a phone call and is talking to Matt and using his little Rolodex to try and remember who Matt is.
Rolodex, that's old school. I don't know if some of our listeners may not have any idea what a Rolodex even is, let alone have used one. But it's a good illustration of Hank's old school business ways. I think even in 1998, it would have been a little old school to use a Rolodex, but he sure had one.
I recommend using a Rolodex.
Really?
At your desk. Yep.
You heard it here, folks, from Daisy Durndal's mouth to your ear. Well, Hank here is forced to interact with something in between a person and a computer, a telemarketer. Matt, the telemarketer.
Telemarketers are people.
They're people, but they are reading from a computer-generated script, if you will. You know? That's why I say it's kind of something in between. So it's like a chance for that personal touch, but he can't get there because Matt is just following the orders of the machine, if you will. And this kind of snowballs, right? I mean, he turns Matt away, but somehow Matt hits the save button or whatever, and Pandora's box is then opened.
Mm-hmm.
An explosion of pornography headed to Hank's house because the beast has been unleashed. Now, I want to point out that we see Hank's full address on his address labels, and his zip code is 78701. Daisy, that is downtown Austin. Yet another bit of conflicting information about where Arlen actually is.
I'm pretty sure Arlen is not downtown Austin.
No, I don't think it's in downtown Austin. Not nearly weird enough. So next stop is the front yard of Hank's house, where we see a mailbox just chock full of stuff. There's even stuff on the ground.
That is an insane amount of junk mail.
Yes. Now, Bill invokes his future children being tainted by all this pornography on the street. I have to point this out, Daisy. Bill doesn't live on that street. Bill lives on Milton Street, one street over. I don't even know why he's over there. Because they're on Milton Street, not Rainy Street, they probably will not be tainted by the porno tapes at Hank's Rainy Street mailbox. As a matter of fact, Bill, in protest, walks away and crosses the street. He's actually crossing further away from his house, but they do tend to gloss over little geographical details like that sometimes.
Well, he was making a point.
Yes, he certainly was. Point taken.
Peggy says she can't vomit all over herself because she's out of clean clothes. What I want to know is, if she's going to vomit all over herself, why wouldn't she pick something that's already dirty to wear? And well, also, yeah. Do these people not know that they can hang up their laundry indoors?
You think Peggy can vomit at will? She strikes me as the kind of person who might be able to do that.
Oh, I'm sure she can.
Like, I got to vomit. Let me go change my clothes into something dirty, and then I shall vomit all over myself. I believe she can do that.
I'm sure she can do all kinds of things on command.
But as far as hanging stuff up, I think there may be two problems here, depending on the time of year. I guess it probably is late summer. The humidity may be an issue. It may just take forever to dry stuff on the line this time of the year. But there's also Hank's embarrassment. Remember his strong protest about hanging stuff out to dry. But, hey, beggars can't be choosers.
I mean, you hang it up in the bathroom on the shower rod.
Yeah, yeah. Is this the first mention, I believe it is, of Rusty Shackelford?
Dale's, might be.
Dale's alias. Yeah, I love it.
I like how the birth certificate has hardly been used.
Right. Next scene is the Arlen Post Office, because Hank has got to give all this paraphernalia. It's not just videos, by the way. It's magazines and
equipment.
Yes, that he wants to return. So he goes to the post office to try to affect that. I'm not sure that makes any sense, but okay. Anyway, they talk to this clerk who's like running this customer service counter.
Yeah, poor postal worker. She's just trying to get through the day. Yes. I like her scrunchie.
I thought that was a nice touch. I liked her scrunchie and her little ponytail, too. So did Boomhauer, because he hits on
it. Yeah, he sure does.
I don't think that joke aged particularly well, because, I mean, he didn't just say, hey, can we go out sometime? Or, you know, he was very suggestive and suggesting they could use some of the equipment at his place that night if she was interested.
Yeah, it kind of goes, because she's like, do you know this guy? And he's like, no, man, I don't know nobody. I don't know no sex toys back at my place if you're interested.
I like his non-sequiturs like that.
Smooth.
Smooth operator. Hank is fighting the beast to clear his name from public shame here, but no one in the public seems to care.
No.
The clerk, none of the other customers. As a matter of fact, the old lady shows up, and she is not at all shocked to see some of the stuff. She doesn't understand why Hank would want to throw something away that could prolong his lovemaking pleasure for just pennies a night.
And says it very matter-of-factly.
Right.
Well, the thing is, Hank really lives in his own little bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the world just kind of moves around him.
Right. True.
And, I mean, that's one of the large themes of King of the Hill, is there's the real world and there's Hank's world.
Yeah, that's well said. The issue as it really is and the issue as he sees it. Often are not aligned. Yep. So, yeah, and that carries over to the next scene at the Arlen Municipal Garbage Dump, because a police officer catches Hank and Bill trying to bury the stuff at the dump. And Hank is again embarrassed because the police officer sees what he's burying, but the police officer is just like completely matter of fact about the nature of the garbage. The only thing the police officer cares about is that it has contaminants in it that you're not allowed to put in the landfill.
Right. Petroleum-based and the batteries.
Right.
I mean, that's what he's concerned with. He doesn't care what Hank does with his life. I mean, and that's just how society is at more so at this point than back then. But, mm-hmm. You know, what you do is your own business and everyone does this stuff anyway, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so on the toys. Sure. If Hank and Peggy want to have sex toys, that's their business. Pornography, I would say, is a different animal.
It is. It absolutely is.
Cause of how it exploits people. And as Bill said, sets a standard of beauty that no man can live up to.
Right. I think what this scene is also saying is like, the mailing list and the name, it has gotten so out of control that pornography is no longer the issue. It's more personal items.
Yeah.
It's just gotten so out of hand.
That's fair. And really, pornography is just a thing to drive Hank's, like to motivate him to want to clear this up. But it's more about an impersonal world of technology and the fight against that.
Also, I have never heard of this stuff being sent to people's houses for free.
Yeah, what exactly happened there? Is he now gonna owe money to consenting adults, the mail order?
Is this going to end up on his credit report that he order all of this stuff that he didn't actually order.
Like promotional stuff?
I feel like that used to be a thing, was companies would send stuff out and then bill you if you didn't return it. I feel like that was a big thing.
Or maybe here, just, you know, the nature of pornography, it'd be kind of like giving someone free cigarettes, you know, like you're going to give them this and you know they're going to get hooked and you're just going to make the sale later. Maybe it's something like that too, something more sinister.
Something like that.
Well, at any rate, this is definitely a foreign world to hang. Not just the movies, but some of the other equipment.
By the way, I do agree with you on the merits of pornography. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Hank has no idea what these things even are. I mean, he just has no clue. They're so foreign to him that it doesn't even register.
Right.
And I think it's so funny because he thinks he's such a man of the world and knows, like, how the world works. But he doesn't know what these things are.
Like when he claims that one of the items is a wand massager.
It is not. It's called that to get past laws.
I wonder, though, does he not know what that is, or does he know... But he's kind of grasping at straws to this police officer because he's just so embarrassed. He's trying to kind of tell the police officer, it's not what you think.
Police officer still doesn't care.
Doesn't care either way, right. That's right.
But whatever. He runs off with the things that he's trying to dump in his arms, which I thought was funny.
Yes, well, he doesn't want it to fall into the wrong hands. The police officer picks it up and then smears his name all over town. Could get really bad.
I guess so.
As usual, Dale bails. He's Daler the Bailer. Whenever an officer shows up, like, a real authority shows up. It was like in 3 Days of Kondo when they actually got to the border crossing and he immediately just jumped out of the car and ran. That happened here. When the rubber meets the road, Dale does not have his friend's back. I'm sorry to say. Well, in the next scene, Peggy is driving home, and somehow this particular little short thing has always stuck in my head. Peggy trying to sing Queen of Hearts.
And she doesn't know the lyrics.
I like that. That's the music she listens to, though. Like, I guess it sounds probably from the 70s or maybe early 80s.
Right. Early 80s country.
Yeah.
Juice Newton.
I would like to listen to that. That same station that she listens to.
Also, I noticed in the den, Luann now has 2 braids.
Showing out now.
Yeah.
Love it.
Once you get it, you get it.
The next scene is in the parking lot outside of Arlen Video, and Hank is mounting a protest, a public protest. He's trying to get a petition signed. He's trying to boycott, do all these things to get back at Arlen Video. He's gross. He still has the same filthy clothes on that he had on when he was at Arlen Municipal Landfill. And I think 2 things are going on. 1, the dryer doesn't work, so it's not easy to get clean and dry clothes. But then 2, I think he doesn't care. He's embarrassed about someone thinking that he has bought or rented a porno movie, but he is not embarrassed about the fact that people are seeing him wearing disgusting clothes with trash all over them.
So Peggy seems to have a different top on, like a teal kind of color. So I guess she went shopping instead of trying to wash clothes. She just gave up on it.
Right, right. That thing she always wears, she can't wear because it's dirty or wet.
I mean, do they not have laundromats in Arlen?
Yeah, that's a great point. Why don't they just take it to a laundromat? Because they don't even have to wash it at the laundromat. They could just take the wet clothes to the laundromat and dry it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they've got laundromats.
They must have laundromats. They have an airport.
Yeah, they've got to. So then Peggy kind of goes off on Hank and his videos and his girls pulling up their shirts.
Her dance.
Her dance. And I wonder if she's referencing Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah, that's a 90s.
That was such a thing right then.
Yes.
At that time, if you were alive back then and you watched Comedy Central after about 11 o'clock at night, you would see a lot of commercials for Girls Gone Wild.
Right. Call 1-800, whatever it was. Yep.
Yep. So it seems that Peggy is trying to think that he did, in fact, rent cuffs and collars.
Right. Somehow it's backfiring. Like, the fact that he is protesting so much and cares so much about it.
Right. It's like, you care a little too much.
Right, right. It's just $40, Hank. And that $40 would be less than the discount they were going to get getting the store credit card, presumably. I'm assuming they're paying more than $400 for this dryer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can kind of see that. Back at the mailbox, Hank is continuing this battle. He's not at the Arlen Video store anymore, but now he's at his own mailbox. Peggy has basically told him, if you want to fight this battle, you can just do it your own. So he now has this, like, sad but determined one-man battle against the beast, where he's just kind of falling asleep in front of his own mailbox.
Honk if you hate Arlen Video.
Burp, burp. Yep.
And his shirt miraculously cleaned itself. It was dirty. Maybe it got so dirty that it became clean.
You think Hank's closet is just like 2 dozen of the exact same shirt?
Probably, but wouldn't he have run out by now?
Yeah, well, fair enough.
So Peggy has replaced him in the alley. She is now with the guys.
I did not catch that.
Yeah, they're doing their, yep, yeah. And she says, oh yeah. So then Hank does get a honk.
Right.
But it's John Redcorn.
Joke's on him. It was just John Redcorn honking to get Nancy to come out and jump into his Jeep.
He is not blasting Juice Newton. He is blasting Pat Benatar's Heartbreaker.
He listens to a different radio station, I believe, than Peggy.
He listens to Y104.
The next scene is at the front door of the Hills house and then kind of moves to the kitchen, but some movies have been dropped off and Bobby picks them up. These movies have suggestive names, do they not?
Cuffs and Collars, Jailbait.
Illegal Entry. And Hung Jury. Those were the names of the movies.
And Bobby's so naive and innocent and sweet that he thinks they're cop movies.
Right, he thinks this is like Beverly Hills Cop or something.
Which actually saves Peggy from having to explain what they actually are.
Right, right.
So I want to know what that thing is that's hanging off of the cabinet. It looks like a safe or a toaster oven or a safe toaster oven.
I went back and looked at that, and I agree. It is kind of puzzling, and it just looks huge. I guess it is a toaster oven, but...
It looks like a safe, though.
It looks like a safe. What it is a safe in which they put their toaster oven.
It keeps your toast safe.
I guess these videos came with a ransom note, the old school, like, cut.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to know what magazines they got cut out of. I like that when Hank flipped it over, this is a nice grounded moment, because it's starting to get a little, like, woo-hoo, conspiracy kind of thing. He flips it over, and the ransom note says, I need these back when you're done.
So, without jumping ahead, without spoiling it, any guesses as to who it is? Is it Boomhauer? Buck? Bill? John Redcorn? Buckley?
I like the Buckley theory. That'd be kind of fun. But the ransom note probably would have started with, hey. Okay, here we go, Daisy. The answer is in the tapes. There's only one way for Hank to get the answer to his problem, and that's just to watch the porno movies. So he goes to the den, turns off the light, locks the door.
Unplugs the phone.
Like that.
Turns down the photos of
yes,
the family.
He doesn't want them to see what he's doing. And gets down to business. Why didn't the mystery friend that left him the ransom note just tell him the answer? Why give him a note saying, here's how to unlock the mystery to spend hours of time watching porno movies instead of just telling him?
Well, not to jump ahead, but sometimes you just can't state facts without having a real knowledge and understanding of where those facts came from.
Mm.
Also, I think this friend wanted Hank to get out of his discomfort.
Mm, possibly.
Which is a nice thing for a friend to do when you think about it. To kind of help a friend get out of, feeling uncomfortable with something. I mean, maybe not the best thing to do that with, but I don't know.
There was some good intentions here, possibly.
But you should always unplug your phone, and you should always, always turn down the family photos.
And for goodness sake, make sure your pen is full of ink.
Oh, yeah.
You could get into a very compromising situation otherwise.
Or use pencils.
Better idea.
Mechanical pencils are good.
Sometimes you have to shake those as well. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but not... Anyway.
I like the blinking 12. That's such a thing from that era when everybody had VCRs and stuff. They wouldn't set their clocks or whatever, and they would just blink 12. That's pretty funny, and I think it's a funny thing in this scene because it would be common to signify the passing of time. You show a clock, and then you show that clock a few hours later. That's what they do here, but it's still blinking 12. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So we see Hank, and he's taking copious notes. He's not even digesting what he's seeing. He's just reporting what he's seeing.
Right. He's taking an academic approach. But, he is trying to unlock the mystery here.
Until he runs out of ink and is shaking his pen. And that's the exact moment when Peggy walks by and only sees the arm movement from the back.
Yes. That's all we have to say about that.
Well, she runs off in horror and commands Bobby to leave the house.
Yep.
And he just says, okay.
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 Well, Hank sticks with it, and he does eventually solve the problem.
I just realized that den, that's where Luann sleeps.
It is. It is. He has tainted essentially Luann's bedroom. Do you like how he screen captured the important moments in the movie to make his case?
With his Polaroid camera?
Yep.
Yeah. Very important to have a Polaroid. That way the film never gets into the wrong hands. And there are no negatives to destroy either.
Just remember, when the picture would come out, you have to shake it. Just be real careful about what that looks like.
You don't have to shake it, I don't think. I think you can just set it down on a table.
Much safer route. The next scene is small claims court because Hank is taking Arlen Video to court. There was a great 90s thing in this. Daisy, any listeners who were about our age maybe would have caught this. I recognized her voice right away. The voice of the judge here. I did not know the actress's name. It's Lynn Thigpen.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like I guess it was the police chief or whatever, the chief that they would talk to on the show Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego.
That's how I knew her name, because she would always say, "This is Lynn Thigpen for Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego."
Oh, man.
I loved that show.
Man, I never would have come up with that. She really nails this. She does a great job playing this judge, and it just took me back immediately. You heard that voice, and I was like, oh, man, that's definitely the lady from Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. Talk about small claims. The case in front of them, the amount in question, is $1.50. Definitely a small claim at this court. That grounds everything and actually makes Hank's $40 claim seem more serious.
So it's weird because it seems like it's a weekend based on the goings-on of everything else, but they're in court. I don't think even in Texas courts are open on weekends.
Right. Surely Hank didn't take time off of work for this.
No.
Oh, yeah, over to the B story in the front door. Bobby is still thinking that this is all about his birthday and now a surprise party. He's convinced that while they're at court, they're actually kind of lining up to surprise him, right?
And he wants to know where the magician has parked. So it's like, oh, Bobby, you're still young enough to have a magician at your party or to want a magician at a party.
You know, prestidigitation is right up Bobby's alley. It's a performance art that's kind of campy-ish. It's got Bobby Hill written all over it. I can see how he would want to be a magician and would lean towards something like that, would want that at his party.
They have props.
Yes.
He does like props.
Prop performance, absolutely.
I like how Luann has just completely bought into the idea now, even though in the beginning she knew it was only about a dryer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very. She's impressionable. She's got right in line with that. Back at Small Claims Court, shout out to the voice acting of Mike Judge here as Hank makes his case. There's something that he kind of nails about courtroom drama in the way that Hank speaks here that I thought was pretty interesting. So Hank's case hangs on the fact that one of the actresses in his movies named Fernanda Valley, that he rented a movie that would have been on June 23rd, but that would have been before the movie could have come out. Anyway, he basically makes that case with photographic evidence. And a key part of that is when she turned 18, what was Fernanda Valley's birth date? I want to know what his source was on that. How on earth does he know what Fernanda Valley's birth date was?
Wasn't there something about she had a tattoo?
Yeah, of I Heart Charlie Sheen.
And I guess because you have to be 18 to have a tattoo.
Okay, maybe.
Back then, or that was his line of thinking. I don't know, but I like that putting shoes on horses and donkeys is a vital component of adult cinema.
Right. Okay, problem solved. The judge does fine for Hank. She orders Arlen Video to remove the debt from its computer. And that solves that credit card problem, but it doesn't really solve the Beast problem. The Beast is still kind of out there with this whole thing, and I don't know if it can ever be retracted, but it's 1998. Let's just leave it at the Arlen Video debt removal credit card thing and let it go.
So I'm trying to understand how anyone could rent a movie that hasn't been made yet.
Yeah.
That is a serious clerical error. Whoever messed that up at Arlen Video really messed that one up.
Right. You would think the error would just be that someone used Hank's name or whatever to rent the video. That's not what happened. They didn't even get rented somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. So not only did they pull up the wrong account and pull up Hank's, they somehow got the date wrong and the movie wrong and all three wrong.
Right.
I don't know. Or maybe Hank rented it all along.
Yeah. Right.
So, surprise. Those movies belong to Bill.
Mm-hmm. The guy he was protesting about pornography on his street, or actually on the next street.
He was mostly protesting the unrealistic bodies of the men in the movies.
Yes.
And he would know, wouldn't he now?
Yes, good point.
And back to Megalomart, where Peggy is getting her dryer.
Yep. You know, I would call this grounding here because they're still beholden to a computer. I mean, they have solved the problem and they get approved for the credit card now, but still, the clerk there had to, basically, they were either going to get a frowny face or a smiley face on the computer, and that was kind of it. Mm-hmm. The store clerk didn't have any ability as a person to override any credit denial.
But I like the smiley face. Smiley face, frowny face. Because I think usually when you apply for a credit card, they tell you the amount that you're approved for. Like $200, $5,000, whatever. But in Arlen, they just have the smiley frowny system.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, like the Coliseum. Yep. Well, finally, they tie everything up back in the front yard by actually getting the dryer. I don't know why they're delivering the dryer to the Rainy Street side of the house, because he can pick his washer and dryer in the garage, which is on the alley side of the house.
It makes sense to me. The street is for the public. The alley is for the people that live there and the garbage collectors. It makes sense to me, having lived with an alley before.
Okay, fair enough. And then we close it out with an alternate version of the King of Hill theme to go along with the adult films that the show was about. Daisy, how do you rate this episode?
I guess a 6. I don't know. It was just kind of there.
I really like this one. I give this one an 8. It was a favorite of mine. I thought it was funny, and Hank's issues that were at play here I thought were complex, and they were dealt with interestingly. It wasn't just the, you know, that he was about the pornography. It really was more about technology and the impersonal technology and those forces working against Hank, him trying to push back. And finally, I thought the B story with Bobby and Luann was just delightful, a lot of fun. And I also liked it was tied up in the end because Bobby thought that the dryer was his birthday present. It all kind of worked out.
It's perfect. Well, he was very excited to watch the dryer television.
It's win-win. It averages out to a 7. So a nice little episode.
Well, it's about time the propane maniacs move the clothes to the dryer to watch them spin around and around. Next time, it's the final shinsult.
The final shinsult.
Goodbye, everybody.